it is possible to focus on verse 1 as well as 12. Let's look at verse 1 again. And it came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham. It was God, in other words, who tempted Abraham and said to him, Abraham, and he said, behold, here I am. So, if we take verse 1 and verse 12 and sort of marry them, then we'll see what we are talking about. In verse 12, the angel is speaking and says, I know that you fear God. And verse 1 says that God tempted Abraham. Therefore, you can argue that the angel was speaking on behalf of God. But here is now, the angel was speaking on behalf of God, and we are to answer the question literally in this light. So, here is a statement. Now I know, etc., which is still in literal terms. So I'm going to translate the three words, now I know. This is the translation of them. There was a time, here is the time on the blackboard. I'll put it in a sort of reddish. Oh, that's the same as that one. So I better use another color. I'll use this color. Right. There was a time. Name that one. Once you make a mistake with the linear concept, then you have to perpetuate the mistake. So it says, there was a time when I did not know what intentions you had in your heart. At this time, however, that is this one here, the now time, the events that I have perceived, and I put in parentheses with my own eyes, if you like, I put in parentheses because it's not, we don't want to press that point. The events that I have perceived have brought about an important change in me, which enriches me by providing the information that hitherto I lacked. That's what now I know means. So let's follow that. What follows necessarily from that translation. So that, given the translation, here is what follows from it. One, the God of Abraham has a limitation, a lack of some sort. Number two, he can gain something, namely what he lacks. Three, he has a past. Let me stop here and go back to the beginning of this numbering again. Because I want to say, when I say here is what follows necessarily, I mean all this is packed inside that statement. I do not mean that I'm not producing them out of my mind. I am getting them out of that statement. When we say, now I know, there was a time when I didn't. So we are saying, when there was a time that I didn't, we are saying, number one, that God has a limitation, a lack. He lacked certain information. Number two, we are saying, when he says, now I know, we are saying he can gain something, namely what he lacks. Number three, therefore, if he can gain something, then he has a past. He was unknowing, and now is not unknowing. He is not a being with a lack. He was that, now he isn't. So, he changed. Number four, from what he was to what he is. But if he changed, then according to what we have up there, he is subject to time and space. He is subject to space. Because change occurs in space. And then I have three asterisks, 6, 7, 8, and 4, and 9, which can be omitted, but we don't need to omit them now. He has parts, because to be in space is to have parts. He has a physical body, because what has parts has a body. He has a shape, because body has shape. He is perceptible through the senses, because bodies are perceptible. Now you may think, no, I don't think so. You have to show where the mistake is here. There is no mistake. And if he is perceptible through the senses, but we don't need 6, 7, and 8, and 9, so I can go straight from 5. Look, he is subject to space. 5. He is subject to space. Change occurs in space. 10. He is not spirit. 11. God is not spirit contradicts the Bible, because the Bible says that God is spirit. 12. Since the thinking of 1 to 9 is correct, but the conclusion 10 is false, the premise that God came to know, etc., is false. Now, I do not stop there. That's all I need to say. I could have stopped my analysis there. We have shown that the literal interpretation is wrong, and the semi-literal interpretation also is wrong, because they both deny God. The literal interpretation, the first one, says only the angel did not know, not God, and the semi-literal interpretation denies the reality of God. It says God is not a spirit. It's not God. God is not spirit. So they are both inaccurate. But I thought I would go on and write an explanation of what it does mean, because quite often people need to know. They say, well, it's not good enough for you to tell me what it doesn't mean, although it is. It is good enough. That's all I need to show, that it doesn't mean what people say. And the mistake is here. The mistake is in taking this now in literal terms, reading the Bible in painfully literal terms. Even so, being a nice man, I thought I would write what the scripture does mean. So we go on to a figure of speech, which is called condescension. The passage is to be taken in figurative terms. See the above argument. What does that mean? That means if you read the above argument and you can't take it literally, and you can't take it semi-literally, there isn't anything left. The only thing left is figurative. Number two, figures of speech are not deduced. They are either recognized or they are not. It's a matter of literature. And the figure is called condescension, the poetic device which treats God as if he were human or something less than human. Number four. An example of this figure in the Bible is the Lord said in his heart. In his heart. He said to himself. Well, what does that mean? Or I can give you a better one than that. Where God says, my soul hates. Right? God is love. He doesn't hate. But that is, we are making God. We are using a poetic device to present God as if he were a human being or something less. So when he says, now I know, we are doing the same thing. We are presenting God in terms we understand. An example of, we said that, number four. Five, explanation of the figure. The use of this figure stresses God's personal dealings with Abraham. The test was not a means of God's learning anything at all, but of helping Abraham grasp an important truth regarding his relationship with God. Abraham's action marks the start, hence the word, the term now, of a close and personal connection with God, the like of which he had never experienced. Reason for the use of the figure: when the authors of the biblical accounts said that the trees got together to select a king, or that the mountains will skip with joy, they were resorting to a device that draws attention to something special. "You are my sunshine" is much more expressive than "I need you," and closer to the truth we wish to express. Now, I emphasize that point because quite often we are under the impression that if somebody says this is a poetic device or a figure of speech, that person is taking away from the scriptures instead of adding something. And I am saying that when the scriptures are speaking poetically or in figures of speech, something important is going on, something that requires attention and emotional attachment, which is not possible to express without the figure of speech. So, when you say this, how would you say then, the mountains will skip with joy? Whatever you say, it will not be as good as that. How do you say the trees got together to select the king? It's a parable, but it has an effective, it's an effective device, and it's useful for conveying ideas and spiritual lessons which otherwise would have been impossible. So I am saying that to reduce the Bible to specific language would make it into some kind of scientific textbook that would have no value to it. The Bible is not written that way. It was written to be used by the people who read it, and the Jews, and the Hebrew language is full of figures of speech. In fact, when you see something in the Old Testament and you do not know if it's a figure of speech or a literal statement, you are secure to take it as a figure of speech, because the Hebrew language functions that way. That is the way the language functions. And somebody asked me a question after the last conference. He says, where do you get that information? You get that information from knowing the language. That's all. In the same way as I can tell you, now I know, and I gave the translation of it. Where did I get that translation? From where did I get it? Well, I made it up. That is the translation. That's not a translation. That's mine. That's not mine. It is the only translation of that passage. And anybody who knows what "now," "I," and "know," those words mean, if he knows that, then this is what he has in mind. So you have to know the Hebrew language to understand the figures of speech. And when the Hebrews spoke, they spoke in figures, they understood in figures, and they felt in figures. They say, talk about bowels of compassion. That's how the heart, they speak of the heart. And I'm saying, even today, when we say, "You are my sunshine," we are saying something, we are using something that is more expressive than "I need you." "I need you" is factual. "You are my sunshine" is expressive. Poetry is expressive. Why do we sing songs? Because we want to express ourselves. Why don't we just write technical letters instead? They all do the same job. There is some kind of song that you take your guitar under somebody's window at night and sing a serenade. There is no substitute for that. So I give other examples where this sort of thing happens in the Bible. Perhaps you could go through, I gave three examples. That's enough. You can look at others yourselves. In Deuteronomy chapter 8 and verse 2. "And thou shalt remember all the way which the Lord thy God led thee these 40 years in the wilderness to humble thee. Notice the purpose it is to humble Israel and to prove thee. That means to test you, but to test you not for the sake of that God might learn something, but that they might learn something. To know, now to learn, God wants to learn what was in your heart. But that is a figure of condescension, whether you would keep his commandments or not. So there is an example of the same thing happening in Jeremiah chapter 7. And verse 31. And they have built the high places of Tophet, which is in the valley of the son of Hinnom, to burn their sons and their daughters in the fire, which I commanded them not, neither came it into my heart. Well, neither came it into my heart is a figure of condescension. It seems to say that here is something that the Israelites did, which God learned from. There was something not in his heart, now it is in his heart, and now he has enriched himself from their experience. But that's not what he means. The argument is, here is the thought, if you have to cash the figure of speech in terms of pragmatic expression, here's what you have to say. If something did not enter into the mind of an all-knowing being, how much less should it enter their minds? In other words, that's how bizarre the decision was. Another way of saying it is, madness has its limits, and they exceeded those limits. It's like saying that he has never entered Mr. Tekach's mind to make an announcement that no minister should steal the forks and the spoons, from the lunch tables. Well, that's another way of saying that action is bizarre, and odd. So, it has never entered my mind means something like that. That is how bizarre the action is. And in Jeremiah 32, and verse 35. And they built the high places of Baal, which are in the valley of the son of Hinnom, to cause their sons and daughters to pass through the fire unto Moloch, which I commanded them not, neither came it into my mind that they should do this abomination to cause Judah to sin. Again, the same point exactly. Now I have a question. Does the handout on Genesis 22 indicate a simpler or a more complicated way of reading the Bible? Now the best way I can answer that question is this. If you go up to somebody whom you think you know and say, "Hi, Fred," and he says to you, "You must be confusing me with somebody else. My name is not Fred. My name is Stanislav Kapulczynski." Then you say, "Are you making things easier or more difficult for me?" He should say, "I don't know. But one thing I do know for sure, that my name is Stanislav Kapulczynski, not Fred." So, the Bible then, whether it's more difficult or easier, that's an irrelevant question to ask. Quite often we buy into packaged misconceptions. For example, that the simpler is better than the correct. And it isn't. It is never better than the correct. So why do we want the simpler? What is wrong with the word correct? So in the long run, it's simpler to aim at correctness. And it's not always correct to go the simple way. I have another question regarding Genesis 22. Does the fact that God does not learn imply that God knows in every detail what we will do tonight or for the rest of our lives? That's the question. That's another way of saying, did God know ahead of time what Abraham would do? Right, that's the question. That question cannot be answered until we fathom the meaning of the word know. There are different senses of the word know that are playing inside this kind of concept, in this kind of question, and we shall be caught out if I don't draw it on the board. So I like to erase everything again and write new, make new patterns. Well, the yellow chalk does not erase so easily. Is not distracting. Let me illustrate the different senses of the word to know. Supposing I put a train on the lines, and that this train will go from the station. Is the station to destination, let's say Los Angeles. Now, if I say, does God know ahead of time where the train will go? Well, that question is to know. Means to know whether etc. means is the same as to know where the lines are. And the answer to that question is, see, when I have a train set in my room, I make a little train, and I put the railway lines to go in a complete circle, then I know where the train will go. How do I know? Because I look at the lines. I know where I put them. And if something does not malfunction, then I know exactly where it's going. Now, in that sense, the answer for God is no, he doesn't. God does. I know, but God doesn't. Why? Because this kind of no says, this kind of no is wrong. Wrong sense of no. In other words, God is not to be reduced to a spatial being. God does not need lines in order to know where a train will go. I do. So this statement there uses the word no in a rather naughty way. We are saying, does God figure out where the train will end up? Does God compute? Does God calculate, right, events like a human being does? So the question then is God like a human? Is God a human being? That's what the question is. So the answer is, no, he's not. He is not a human being. That kind of no has no meaning, has no application to God. Now, let me take another shot at it now, right? And let's put another train this time. And put it on a different kind of line. Let's say that it goes there, and then there's a junction here. And this goes to Los Angeles. And this goes to San Francisco. And let's put a driver inside this train too. And one up here. Right. So, now if I say, does God know where the train will go, I mean, does God know what is in the mind of the driver? That's what I mean by that. Does God know how the driver will think? So here, to know is the same as know where the train will go, etc. It's like saying to know in terms of to know what the driver, the driver here, will think. But now this word is ambiguous. That word no is ambiguous, because it is not clear whether we mean to know the causal connections, or to know in a non-causal way. Now, let me analyze that to see what I mean. Supposing to know the cause of connections. Supposing if the driver takes tea in the morning, then he goes to Los Angeles. But if he drinks coffee in the morning, then he must go to San Francisco. Now, if that is the kind of thing, then that is, again, the answer is no. No to that. Because, for the same reasons as that. Because, I mean, supposing I simplify things. Here I'm saying, if something happens to me in the morning, then I behave one way. If something else happens to me, then I behave in a different way. That something else causes me to go this way or causes me to go that way. If that's the meaning we have in mind, then it's like knowing the railway lines again. The same thing. So we are reducing God to a man. So that's not good. Now let's discuss this one here. To know in some other way. In fact, I can spell this one out. Let me put it in. I'll erase that and put it in different ways. To free choice, free will. Does means to know this man's free will. The free will of that man. Does God know the free will of that man? Does God, when he looks at him here, know what things he will decide over there? I don't know the meaning of this word now. Now, I haven't got a clue as to what that word means in this context. Because the word free will, seems to say that nobody knows. Nobody knows. Not even the driver. Even the driver doesn't know. Because when the driver comes down to here, he may realize that the lines here are damaged. And he may say, oh, I better go this way. You can't stop a train. Not at this speed. Supposing it's an express train and it goes very fast. Like one of these European trains. They go, I forget what, it's 200 miles an hour or something like that. And he cannot stop it in time. So, he goes this way. So he doesn't know where he's going himself. Now, if you see, I don't know the meaning of the word, of this word. So, that answer is, I have to put a question mark here, depending what exactly we have in mind when we ask that question. It's like, it seems to be saying, does God have in mind a predetermined destination for that which is not predetermined? If that is what this question is saying, then obviously it's a non-question. Because the answer is, man has a free choice. It is not predetermined by God's knowledge. Now, when we have that kind of thing, then we have a problem on our hands, because I still need to say that God knows everything. God knows everything. Now that I know is true. We proved it. Now we know that is correct. But look, I said no for this one, and I said no for that one. And I am putting a question mark there because I do not know if the question is meaningful. So we've got to find a way. Now we've got to find a meaning of the word no that will tell us exactly what God does and what God does not do. Perhaps we could start with that in the next session, because we are coming to the end of this presentation, unless I speak without a tape. And then people will ask me, what did you say? And I'll say, you should have been there. Right? So we'll see you next time.